Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. I haven't been in New York City, where I was born, in a good number of years. Ron Padgett hasn't visited Los Angeles in a good number of years. And so when Ron Padgett's collected poems came out, although I wanted to tremendously, we didn't talk about them. They've been out for some time now. The year they came out, they won the Los Angeles Times Book Award. They've won the William Carlos Williams Award. He's one of my very favorite poets. But here am I, in the middle of the coldest winter New York has seen in many years, in Ron Padgett's apartment, to talk about his collected poems, which include poems in that volume, collected poems, and a poem or two beyond it. He is also the person who wrote the poems for the poet in Jim Jarmusch's movie, Patterson. And that poet is a young poet, bus driver, making a living. Now, as I remember, you, when you were very young, were asked what you were going to be by your father, and you didn't say bus driver, you said...
I said, I'm going to be a poet.
And your father said...
Well, okay.
And I think that you've known that you're a poet for such a long time that your website has been Ron Padgett, poet. What is the difference between someone who knows he's going to be a poet and someone who's going to be a poet while driving a bus?
Well, the obvious difference is that I never drove a bus. And in fact, I never had any vocational interest at all. And so when I went to university, I became an English major because that seemed to lead nowhere. And so I skillfully avoided having any kind of career because I wasn't interested in being a physicist or a doctor or a bus driver.
You were born in Tulsa, and you came here with, well, around the same time as three or four friends, yeah?
That's right, yeah.
Who were they?
Yeah. They were the artist-writer Joe Brainard, the poet Dick Gallup, and another poet, Ted Berrigan. Joe and I, and Dick all went to the same high school in Tulsa. Dick was a year older, but Joe and I came east, and I went to Columbia, and Joe went back to Dayton, Ohio to go to art school, but he dropped out after a few months and came to New York. And then a month or so after that, Ted Berrigan left Tulsa and came to New York and sort of joined us. And the year after that, Dick Gallup dropped out of Tulane and came to New York. So we had this little band of Okies here.
Yes, I think John Ashbery called you the Tulsa School of Poetry.
Actually, he called us the soi-disant Tulsa School of Poetry, putting an Ashberian twist on it.
And that was largely because there was a New York School of Poetry, no more a school. Everyone has had different ways of defining what the New York School of Poetry is, but the three of you admired the poetry being written by that previous generation, not just the Ashbery and O'Hara stuff, but Jack Kerouac, a whole bunch of more, more direct, more immediate poetry than the things that were being written at that time in the 1950s. I remember when I was in high school, I'm 10 years younger than you, they were still, you know, beating a table with their finger to show us what metrics were.
Yeah, yeah. That we were given, when I was in high school in Tulsa, we were given a steady diet of Longfellow and this sort of thing. A little Shakespeare, too. But the only Whitman we got was O Captain, My Captain, which is one of the most his most uninteresting poems. So, yeah, but for myself, the discovery of contemporary poetry began with Howl, with Allen Ginsberg's poem Howl. And I had discovered it just after discovering The Song of Myself of Walt Whitman. And I saw the, you know, the correlation. They're very similar poems with a lot of high energy and long lines and kind of a free, open exuberance that was very appealing to a 15-year-old such as myself. And so that really kind of started me off on, and there's, you know, sort of a clean, direct, conversational language in those poems, and which you find in a different form in later poets like William Carlos Williams and Robert Creeley and a bunch of others. So, yeah, that was one type of poetry that appealed to me and I think appealed to Ted. But, you know, Ted Berrigan and I and Dick Gallup and I and Joe Brainerd and I, although we were great buddies, we all wrote differently and we had different aesthetics and different tastes. And we, Ted and I argued a lot about poetry and we had a great time arguing with each other.
That was the time when one could have a great time arguing.
Ted, for instance, was a great admirer of Conrad Aiken's poetry.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Which I found to be kind of not that interesting, ultimately. But Ted loved it. He loved John Chiardi, too. And I thought Chiardi was okay, but I wasn't like a big fan of his. Ted was wild about Auden. And I liked one book of Auden's, The Orators, which I thought was fabulous. And some of the other stuff, a few poems here and there. I don't mean to knock them, but I'm just saying that, you know, it's different strokes for different people. I think I wrote my first poem when I was 14, but I didn't really know much about writing poetry. I'd read Emerson, some of Emerson's poems, you know, By the Rude Bridge That Arched the Flood and all that, Arched the Flood. And I knew about rhyme and things like that. But the first poem I wrote was sitting in my bedroom looking out the window during a violent rainstorm and watching the huge elm tree in the yard thrash about as I thought about how hurt I was at Lynn McCloskey and my ninth grade class didn't love me. And so I took pen to paper and expressed it in a poem of, I think, eight lines rhymed, A-B, et cetera. And I still have the poem, by the way. And no, Michael, I'm not going to read it to you.
The people from Coffee House Press have published a mammoth, wonderful-looking book of Ron Padgett's collected poems. Let's hear a poem.
Oh, okie doke. This is a poem that I wrote actually a long time ago, 40-some years ago, and it's used in the new film by Jim Jarmusch, the film called Patterson, and it's used as if it had been written by one of the characters in the film, the protagonist, a guy named Patterson. Anyway, this is the poem. Love poem. We have plenty of matches in our house. We keep them on hand always. Currently, our favorite brand is Ohio Blue Tip, though we used to prefer Diamond brand. That was before we discovered Ohio Blue Tip matches. They are excellently packaged. Sturdy little boxes with dark and light blue and white labels with words lettered in the shape of a megaphone as if to say even louder to the world, here is the most beautiful match in the world. It's 1.5-inch soft pine stem capped by a grainy dark purple head, so sober and furious and stubbornly ready to burst into flame. lighting, perhaps, the cigarette of the woman you love for the first time. And it was never really the same after that. All this will we give you. That is what you gave me. I become the cigarette and you the match, or I the match and you the cigarette, blazing with kisses that smolder toward heaven.
Ron Padgett reading Love Poem. How did that poem get chosen for the movie? Did you choose it?
No. Jim Jarmusch went through my collected poems, and he picked poems that he thought would work for this character. And he selected four initially. And I thought they were good selections myself. They did seem to fit together, and they seemed plausible for this character. But then subsequently, I wrote three more poems for the film itself, for this character. But he made the initial choices, and then he approved of the three others as well.
Now, William Collis Williams is from Paterson, New Jersey, where the movie is set, and some of his poems appear in the movie. But here we've got matchboxes, and they're common objects, but put together out of acts of imagination, lines that are not just descriptions of the matchbox, but the things that the heart does when it imagines loving the matchbox to its full vocation, huh?
Yeah. Well, Williams, he has a famous saying, no ideas but in things. I don't think he fully believed that. I mean, that statement itself is an idea. It has nothing to do with things. but nonetheless, as a general kind of thing to think about, it's pretty good. And he started sometimes with a very simple object or simple situation and let the poem unroll from there. As I did with the poem about matches and matchboxes, I wrote the first line. I had absolutely no idea what was going to come after that. But I wrote the whole poem sitting there in one shot and let it just develop by itself. So it's not, say you start with a small, simple thing like a matchbox or a wheelbarrow, and then you develop some kind of powerful image or feeling or metaphysical notion. If you have that as an agenda or strategy, I don't think it'll work. I think it has to happen of its own or happen in some other way.
Let's hear another poem.
Sure. I thought I would read what they call a prose poem. That's to say, it's just a paragraph. It looks in prose, and it doesn't have any rhyme or anything or even any metaphors or anything like that. And it's a very baggy category. And so I use the word in a kind of baggy way because it's kind of fun. This is called Getting Along. We stride briskly down the country lane. Blue jays squabble overhead in the last wisps of fog, and the night's breath of the woods still around us. Oh, that's a poetic way of saying that we're two old farts out for a morning constitutional. Like the gray-haired but trim couple in nice sports clothes who are walking, smiling and tanned, on the covers of magazines devoted to the issues of health and aging. Those people, however, also have huge retirement funds, and they will never have to worry. On the one hand, I'm a bit nonplussed at finding myself on a magazine cover, and on the other hand, I like to think that, like these model people, as I age, I will enjoy good health. I will not only walk down country lanes, but right up the sides of houses and over their tops. To leave the doctor's office after my annual checkup, I will simply crash through the walls. I will approach the condition of the scientist who not only died and came back to life, but was able to rearrange the molecular structure of sticks and leaves to form a cowboy hat. I will walk unafraid through a forest of cowboy hats. I mean, that starts out completely, you know, kind of poetic and nice. We stride briskly down the country lane, blue jay squabbling overhead and this and that. And then it ends up as completely nutty. I will walk unafraid through a forest of cowboy hats. I get a lot of pleasure from going from point A to point B in that poem.
It's kind of gorgeous. It seems to me that the movie Patterson, Jim Jarmusch's movie, is going to be another touch point for people who see it, who never knew they cared or liked poetry, to say, oh, this is really great. This is what I want to be. This is who I am. And it's kind of wonderful that there is a movie around to do that again.
I know. You know, Michael, my impression is that there are a lot of people in the United States who write poetry. They might not show it to anyone, they might not publish it or whatever, but they're just, I'm getting the feeling that there are lots and lots of people around the country that are going to respond to the movie, not only because it's a very, very nice movie, but precisely because it's about somebody who writes poetry and who's unassuming and who doesn't publish it or have big, big ambitions to become famous or anything. I think it's going to be a nice boost for those people. But also, it's just a really nice movie, you know.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm. I'm talking with Ron Padgett about his collected poems, which were published just a couple of years ago by Coffee House Press. We'll be back after this short break. I'm talking to Ron Padgett. This isn't the occasion of the publication of his collected poems. It's my catch-up. I fell in love with this volume that Coffee House Press put out. Ron Padgett's other books, around, 12 to 15 of them, are gathered together here in the...
There's a bunch. I don't know how many. Yeah,
collected poems. But they have fantastic covers by Joe Brainard or Joe Schneeman or Jim Dine. This was made to look like a poetry book, like an old-fashioned collected poems from the old days. Whitman, Emerson, someone like that. The cover is creamy colored with a brownish black print on it. The book is so beautifully unadorned. The paper is so white. The print is so clear. Tell me about what it was that you wanted.
Well, you pretty much described it. I wanted something that was utterly clean, direct, and kind of classical looking. I didn't want some sort of funny, funky typefaces or even interesting designs. I want it to be extremely clean, simple, and clear. And the inspiration for that actually came from the design of Ezra Pound's Cantos, the British edition. It's a black cover with knocked out white letters. It says The Cantos, Ezra Pound. That's all it says. And I've always loved that cover. It just looks great to me. And So I presented my idea to my publisher, who was at first taken aback, and his design people were like, what? but we actually made it work, and they were happy eventually, too. And I'm lucky to work with a publisher who actually really listens closely to their authors. That's not to say that I don't like more... exciting covers. For instance, this book that came after the collected poems is called Alone and Not Alone, has a wonderful drawing by Jim Dine on it.
Now, let's hear one of the poems. I think you have one from that book with the cover by...
Jim Dine?
Jim Dine, yeah.
Yeah, from this book called Alone and Not Alone.
This is a book that came out after the collected poems of Rod Paget.
Yeah, here's just one poem from this book, Alone and Not Alone. Before I start, I should mention that it mentions a Chinese sage philosopher named Chuangzi from ancient times. The poem's called Butterfly. Chuangzi wrote about the man who dreamed he was a butterfly, and when he woke up, wondered if he weren't now a butterfly dreaming he was a man. I love this idea, though I doubt that Chuangzi really thought that a man would think he's a butterfly. For it's one thing to wake up from a dream in the night, and another to spend your whole life dreaming you're a man. I have spent my whole life thinking I was a boy, then a man, also a person and an American, and a physical entity and a spirit, and maybe a little bit butterfly. Maybe I should be more butterfly. That is, lurch into a room with bulging eyes and big flapping wings that throw a choking powder onto people who scream and fall dead, almost. For I would rescue them with the celestial music of my beauty and my utter harmlessness, my ethereal disregard of what they are.
That's...
Hello. Hello. Earth to run. Hello. I do like that poem, if I may say so. I don't like all the poems I've written by any means, but I like that one.
I think it's a classic. There are poets whose careers have been, like Eliot, whose careers have been made up of major poem after major poem, and then they know the poems, and so do the critics, and so do the readers.
Eliot became extremely well known and regarded relatively early in his career as one of the great poets. And I think he might have actually believed that idea. I don't think he was particularly vain or anything, but I think he had the misfortune to be surrounded with so much approval. And I think it possibly sort of locked him into being, quote-unquote, T.S. Eliot. And it would have been interesting to have him continue to write poetry, really, and to develop the way one would think that a human being would continue to develop or change. But he didn't do that. And, I mean, I don't blame him for it or anything. I mean, he did pretty darn well. I mean, a poem like The Wasteland still is a really interesting poem, and some of the others, too. But I sort of tend to write poetry a little bit the way I brush my teeth. I mean, I just do it more. To me, it's a natural activity.
I wanted to hear a poem that I think is really enjoyable and crazy, a poem called Yak and Yak. It's also in the collected poems.
Yak and Yak. I am saying that grammar is the direct result of how humans feel in the world. Or rather, that grammar follows from what we experience viscerally, and punctuation keeps it that way. That, for instance, people walking down the street are forming various sentences with their bodies. And as the schoolgirl turns the corner, the meaning changes. Ooh, so natural. Just so, the wind that suddenly turns the corner has just blown your hair off. You go indoors and write, "The wind has blown my hair away." Then shift your weight and add, "Almost." For in your mind, your arms have stretched to catch your head, in which Pig Latin is understood, but dog not. Hey. Et le e me el te uye, umthing say at the uwe, otaway o nay. In Hawaiian countries, there was a battle over there, anyhow. And when she heard the racket and the battle of the fierce pineapples clashing under a warm moon, she wrote across the sky with her magic finger in glowing light that she would not love her man any more. The palm trees stood like so many silent exclamation points in the flowing beat of the night's heart.
You know what? Let's hear one more. I can't leave before we do.
Okay. Yeah, we need something to follow. Like, we need a Tums to go follow that, the richness of that thing. By the way, that poem is sort of a somewhat secret homage to Leadbelly, who the part I sang, he actually sings that too in pig Latin and or dog Latin in one of his songs. It's just absolutely beautiful about, and it's set in Hawaii too. So I stole a little bit from there. One of the greatest singers, songwriters of all time. But this is a different one. It's called Words from the Front. We don't look as young as we used to, except in dim light, especially in the soft warmth of candlelight, when we say, in all sincerity, you're so cute, and you're my cutie. Imagine two old people behaving like this. It's enough to make you happy.
Beautiful. I've been talking to Ron Padgett about his collected poems. Poems by Ron appear in the new movie, Patterson, directed by Jim Jarmusch. He is one of my very favorite living poets. Thank you, Ron, for joining me.
And that's really nice of you, Michael. Thank you.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from the collected poems at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, David Sobel. This show was taped in the apartment of Ron Padgett in New York City. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm. He is a bookworm. She is a bookworm. We are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Michael Tolkien is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.